Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions. Whether you need a new warehouse line, hedging, or are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Well, happy Monday to you all. This is Dave Lincoln. You know what? In Texas, they go, welcome to all y'all. So I'm 100% Norwegian from Minnesota. I've learned how to talk like the Canadians do when I lived up in Seattle. Now I live it down here in beautiful central hill country, Texas. I'm learning how to say y'all, fixins, that sort of stuff. And boy, that's a great segue right into the next segment we got. We got Joe Farr right here, Mr. Texas himself. Joe, good to have you on the program as always. And I just want to tee up everybody. We've got a guest. Alice is off enjoying the Florida Keys. I mean, we're going to just kind of sit and think about that for a minute, but she hasn't sent any photos or anything, so we can't live that vicariously through her. But she's down there in the Keys, and we're going to miss her. But we've got Tony Gallegos with us today, one of a partner in the business with her, and just our great program keyed up for you. We've got some hot topics to talk about. There's a new political climate, but Joe, let's get started off with the rates. Good to have you here.
Well, thanks. And people don't have a hard time knowing where I come from, so.
Well, I think Texas talk is good talk, so anyway.
MBS prices today, we're down a little bit today, reversing a lot of what we gained on Friday. And the market opened lower this morning as there was an expectation, and in fact the stock market did show favorable changes. Futures were up early, and now the Dow's up 100, and again it's just essentially reversing what happened yesterday, or on Friday. On Friday, interesting to note, things were kind of opposite of what you might have expected. We had very favorable economic data come out on Friday, and ordinarily you'd say, well, that should move MBS prices lower and stock market higher, but just the opposite occurred. Now today, we got some further good information. The ISM index came out this morning a good bit higher than expected, and is a part of the reason, I guess, or justification anyway, for MBS prices to move a little bit lower and stock market prices to move a little bit higher. So we had a busy week last week.
I was just digesting what you were saying, but yeah, what happened last week? That was a big, big week, as you were saying.
Well, there's a lot of political stuff that happened, starting with the FOMC meeting. The minutes were released Wednesday afternoon, and the minutes really didn't have much of a surprise in it. They left Fed funds rate unchanged, as everyone expected, and their message was that maybe the economy was slightly better off than it was from their last meeting. They did, important to the mortgage markets, and they reiterated the end of the MBS purchase program. That really shouldn't have been much of a surprise to anyone, but there were those that were holding out hope that maybe they'd go ahead and say that, they realized the need to continue that a little bit longer, but they didn't. And I think it's pretty well agreed that March 31st will end the MBS purchase program. And on that news on Wednesday, MBS prices fell a little bit, as you might expect, but there's a lot of different thoughts as to what's going to happen with mortgage rates at the end of that program. Some people say that, there should be no significant consequence, that the market's already factored all that in. Others are calling for a 0.1% increase and 1% increase in mortgage rates, which, would be pretty extreme. The Fed itself has indicated they expect there to be a small increase in rates, and it only makes sense when you take out such a big buyer. They're representing almost all the demand for mortgage-backed securities these days. So It'll be interesting to see. I don't think you should wait until March 31st to determine what's going to happen. I think the market's going to be building in their expectations to what's going to happen as we go forward. And on March 31st, though, or let me say on April 1st, if all of a sudden $12 billion in buyers, or by then it might be $10 billion in the federal government buying, is not there, you may see some pretty heavy volatility for a few days, but it will be an interesting time.
Hey, Joe.
It will, yes, for sure. Go ahead, Chuck.
Oh, sorry about that. Hey, Joe, you know, going back to the really the theme of the show as we get into it is and the different connections involved and not looking at everything, how do you feel that this is going to affect some of the calls to eliminate Fannie and Freddie, you know, with the end of the purchase program for MBS securities? Do you think that's going to influence on, you know, what's going on with that?
Well, I think there, too, it's the political environment is having a weighing very heavily on the mortgage industry right now, and the political environment around Fannie and Freddie is central to part of that. The budget just came out today. The Obama administration budget came out today, which made no mention of or had no budgetary response to closing Fannie or Freddie. They also did not put Fannie and Freddie's liabilities and guarantees on their balance sheet. But they, in essence, said that we're waiting until later down the road. We're not going to take that on right now, which I view as a good thing for the mortgage industry.
Yeah,
I know we're going to talk a lot later on about things going on within the administration and their influence on the mortgage industry. Having some consistency in the mortgage-backed security process and the issuance, and having Fannie and Freddie there to continue, and Ginnie Mae to continue making a liquid market for our industry, is a good thing. I know it's delaying,
yes,
inevitable, but that's a good thing for right now. So I was glad to see that in the budget this morning.
Well,
yes,
there's also some substantial dividends due to the federal government because of this purchase,
yep,
program. Yeah.
You know what, and we're going to talk about that in the next segment. I want to get into what's happening this week, Joe, and so let's save some of that discussion for one of the segments we got coming up on the Hot Topic. But let's get into what's happening this week. Did we cover what happened last week in sufficiency?
Well,
Joe?
The economic data last week was a little, you know, I mentioned the good economic data came out on Friday. Well, it was GDP. Came out a good bit better than everyone thought at 5.7% growth in the fourth quarter. Chicago PMI was better than expected. Consumer sentiment was better than expected. Then this morning, the ISM index was better than expected. So,
yeah,
been lots of economic indications that things are, you know, maybe turning around. And then, well, I'll get into the current week stuff coming up. But housing data was about the only thing last week that really disappointed. Both existing,
yeah,
home sales and new home sales were weaker than expected and down from the prior month. But it's so hard to sift,
yeah,
through and figure out how much the home buyer tax credit incentives changed the market from what would be a little more normal. And I guess we're going to go through that a little bit as we near the end of April, when the extended credit goes away, or is scheduled to go away anyway. Dave, next week real quick, we'll go over...
Yeah, let's cover that.
Well, I don't want to say next week. It is this week now.
It is this week. Next week is this week, yes.
Besides the budget news, which was really pretty big, not a lot of economic stuff coming up except for, and always important, is the jobs report coming out on Friday.
Yes.
The market, or the consensus, I should say, is for job creation, about 10,000 new jobs being created. A substantial deviation from that could really be a market mover. I certainly couldn't tell you if it was going to be plus or less, but it will receive very great attention as again, we're going to talk about the climate in Washington, is jobs, you know, jobs. And so this report will be important. Pending home sales comes out middle of the week, and we'll see if that's consistent with existing and new home sales. It's always a precursor of activity, so
yeah, so
it'd be sure nice to see that kind of turnaround. So that's it from Go ahead.
Yeah, I said it'd be nice to see those that give a positive indication, and hopefully that was just an aberration in the housing data and new and existing. We'll talk more about that in the next segment. Thank you so much, Joe. You are so thorough in bringing us an up-to-date information. We value so much the relationship with MBS Quote Line each week, bringing you guys up-to-date information, kind of more than just what's going on. They've got a wonderful newsletter. If you don't get that service, you should be subscribing to it. They've got a wonderful newsletter that kind of gives you an update. But I don't know about you guys, but I find my life just so busy reading one more thing is just difficult between, you know, being the quote-unquote married with children and running around. It's so nice to have a podcast that I can download and listen to. That's what this is about, or dialing in and listening live, as many of you are right now. We thank you so much for the folks. We have folks literally dialed in from all over the U.S. today. Thank you so much, Joe, for being here and providing everyone an update. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back after this word.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quoteline delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quoteline, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quoteline today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with Lickin' on Lending. This is Dave Lickin. We've got a special guest here. Again, I said at the top of the program that we have Alice out there gathering up some Florida key sunshine down there, and we're happy for her. But we have standing in for Alice, who is always here with us, Tony Gallegos from Atlanta area. Tony, good to have you in there. And we heard some of your comments earlier. We just can't wait for you to give us the legislative update. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much, and hopefully I can do half the job that Alice does. But we hope that Alice is having a great time down in Florida. So, fantastic. But just as you said at the beginning of the program, and I'm going to say this again, is 2010 is going to be an exciting year, a lot of changes. And I know at the end of the hour, we're going to be talking a lot about this, integrating all this information that we're speaking about. I want to give a quick legislative update of what went on over the last week since Alice last spoke about it. You know, really, there have been no major changes in the legislative updates. However, just wanted to give a quick overview of, number one, Senate reapproved Bernanke. I know last week you spoke about that, and a few weeks ago, there was some sentiment that he may, or concerns that he may not be reconfirmed, but he was reconfirmed by the Senate. So I think that all of us agree that was a good thing. So we did put that to bed. And then also with H.R. 4173, and that's the Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act. Really what it is, it's a comprehensive legislation that's going to overhaul the regulations in the financial sector that will, number one, establish a new consumer protection agency to regulate all the products like home mortgages, car loans, and the like, and also expand the Treasury Department and give them new authority to place non-banking financial firms like insurance companies into receivership and regulate the over-the-counter derivatives market. It has passed the House. We knew that. It did pass it on December 11th. It's been referred to the Senate Committee on the Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs on 120, and it's currently not on the calendar for markup or hearing yet. So really no new news on that other than going to the House Banking and Urban Affairs on the 20th of January. And also another update on H.R. 4461, and that's the Banking Integrity Act of 2010, and a lot of times, many times, it's referred to as the Volcker Rule. It was introduced on the 15th of January. There's no real movement on this specific bill, and the reason we're going to be talking about that is the new change political environment or the paradigm shift of what's going on D.C., and we'll cover that a lot more. But there's really been no new movement on this particular bill, but we're going to see how it relates to what's going on. Another thing is, what this is going to do is it's going to separate commercial banking from investment banking. In a nutshell, what it'll do is it's going to prohibit certain affiliations between commercial banking and investment banking firms and bar banks from owning or investing in or sponsoring hedge funds, private equity funds, or proprietary trading operations. Just a few more things, H.R. 45. 16, and that's where no financial company can become too big to fail. It was introduced on the 26th of January, and what the intention of this bill is to provide stability to the financial services industry by promoting transparency, fairness, accountability, and equal access to the market for consumer financial products and services. You know, what that means and how it's going to be done, you know, we're going to get a little more into it, but that bill, H.R. 4516, was introduced. And also the SAFE Act. The talk on the street is, are banks going to be included in the SAFE Act? And there is a groundswell of support that says that we are going to, or a lot of support to include banks in this particular act. I wanted to go through this quickly because I know we have a lot to talk about and how all these different bills relate to what's going on and how it's going to affect mortgage companies.
It is going to have an impact, too, but I tell you, we're in a new economic climate, and I just can't wait to dive in so much to all of this because the next segment we're going to be getting into is how does the new political climate affect you and your business? What strategies should you be adjusting as you look forward to 2010? As Tony said, as I've been saying now ever since the beginning of the year, 2010 is not going to be like any other year we've seen in the mortgage business. It's going to be like the Tale of Two Cities. Remember that old book, that old classic? It's going to be
Mr.
the best
Dickens.
Of times and the worst of times, and we're going to see that. We're going to be right back after this word. Stay tuned. There's a great amount of good topics we'll be discussing in just a minute.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals,
providing classroom and web-based delivery,
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record, performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees, both live and online, on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Again, we can see, I'm looking at a panel, we got folks dialed in from literally all over the country. Thank you so much. Welcome to the program. Lickin' on Lending is a public service as a result of what our three firms, Mortgage Banking Solutions, a consulting firm, MBS Quote Line, an update service about all that's going on in the markets, and then the Mortgage U and Wetzel Trott providing training and quality control services. What we're trying to do with this program is provide you up-to-date, up-to-the-minute information, and not just give you facts what's going on, but help you digest all the information that's out there. There's wonderful blogs out there. There's some wonderful news services. One of the favorite ones I go to, one of the websites I'm going to all the time is Mortgage Orb. I think the folks at Zach and Publication do an outstanding job of really bringing us concise information. There's many great resources out there, and I'm just letting you know that's one of the ones I go to all the time. Of course, I'm a little biased. They happen to publish a lot of my articles that I write, and I'm very grateful for that. But really, seriously, you look at the quality of the content of all that's going on and all their publications, head on over, look at their website, get to mortgageorb.com. It's a great place and a great resource. Joe, Tony, by the way, Tony, great job on the legislative update. Concise to the point. Good job. Alice would be proud of you.
I had a good teacher.
Well, I tell you, digesting all this is no small effort. And again, folks, for those of you that are listening for the first time or hadn't dialed in, this is the time where we kind of pour up a cup of coffee and we pick the hot topics and we really digest those topics. You know what? Dominating the news is the political environment we're in. We have watched the administration come in with one of the most aggressive agendas in memory, in recent memory. And I'll tell you one thing, that when I saw that the election in Massachusetts, where we saw a major upset up there, where Scott Brown was elected, and what was thought to be an absolute certainty that he was going to lose, and we're going to have another Democrat going in there, but the reality that Scott Brown won had so many implications across the landscape. I happened to be down in Florida, in Fort Myers, Florida, working with a client when that election happened, and I just had landed, and I said, what happened? We turned on the news. They were just announcing the fact that Scott was was giving his acceptance speech, and I was so encouraged by that. For those of you who know, I have a tendency to be a little bit on the conservative bent, and I believe that this is something that was needed. I'm very concerned about health care, the cost, and the budget deficits. Joe, we're going to come back and talk a little bit later in the program about the consequence of this new budget and what that means for rates. But what I want to talk about in this Hot Topic segment is the new political climate that we find ourselves. As a result of that election, it seems like everything is starting to change. From the budget to the administration's focus, you're no longer hearing it about being health care, but let's go after those bad boys and the big fat cat bankers and those mortgage guys. Like, they caused this mess, so let's go after them. And that really seems to be the flavor here, Tony.
Yes, I agree. And, you know, that election caused big repercussions because before this, the big item, and the thing we have to realize, and we spoke about this earlier today, and our listeners weren't involved with this, but what's changing is we have to really stop looking at these items in silos. You know, what happens in Washington is going to have major repercussions on how you run your mortgage company. The good thing about it, and you mentioned the best of times, the worst of times. However, this can cause tremendous opportunities for mortgage operations that really embrace, you know what, we are going to have changes. We don't know exactly what they're going to be. But for those mortgage companies that encapsulate and embrace what these changes are, it's going to cause for tremendous opportunities for them to grow and really prosper. So I think that's the good component. So there's going to be a lot of people saying, our companies saying, you know what, I don't want to do this, I don't like it, but there is going to be change. We're waiting to see on what that's going to be. And over the next few weeks and next year, you're going to see it on the show. But what really is coming into play politically is the November elections and how that can that can shift control in Congress. So that's what this is all about. Health care is really looking like it may not pass in the form that they thought it was, and that was going to be the Obama's gift or major trophy to go into the November election. So now what they're doing is they're shifting this into financial reform, going back to what you're doing.
Yeah.
The State of the Union, I'm sorry, the State of the Union address was a shot across the bow.
Yep, I think that's such a good way. When I found out that Scott Brown had won, Joe, I was up there, as I say, in Fort Myers, Florida. I said, watch the next focus. He is going to – he said, this is good for the country. It's sending a clear signal, like you said, you know, Tony, a shot across the bow. But this is sending a clear signal that politicians, you couldn't get it done when you had a majority. That is encouraging for us. But watch out for those of us in the financial world, because the wrath of their failure there is going to come on us in this industry. And focus. I mean, it's interesting. H.R. 4516, Joe, was announced on the 26th. That was the night that we found out that Scott Brown had won. Isn't that interesting?
Well, and then I'd also say, you know, the shot across the bow seemed to be aimed right at the Supreme Court justices in the front row there, you know, that Supreme Court decision also sort of changes the landscape a little bit, doesn't it?
Boy, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes. Would you explain to our listeners how that does? Because a lot of people are going, I'm not sure many people have really started connecting some of the dots.
Well, I'll take a stab unless, Tony, you want to.
No, I love the way you explain
it. Well, no, I mean, the Supreme Court, as everyone probably knows by now, has ruled that the corporations can now advertise and can promote political campaigns. And with that, and we all know that they are the big fat cats, that means they have lots of money. So they have lots of money now with which to campaign, if you will, either for or against somebody or something, and there's a great amount of fear, I believe, in Washington right now that the wrong guys have the ability to now influence people, and I think that's going to either back them into a corner and make them fight harder, or which appears to be what they're doing, or you know, have them move more toward the center, but. You know, that Supreme Court ruling and the exchange between that you saw there between Obama and the Supreme Court justice was pretty significant.
It was significant. I think here's one of the points that I want to bring up. It's so interesting to me that, you know, that victory that allows the big corporations, not just banks, but every big corporation to come in and weigh in on this, has and then the fact that immediate response to the Scott Brown, the Massachusetts upset, Obama comes in and says, I'm going after and attacking big banks. It's kind of like, sir, you want to stand up, so, sir, do you know that the big banks now just got literally handed a major opportunity to come in and dump millions of dollars into campaigns and defeat your programs? I mean, it was really curious. I thought, and a lot of commentary was, is that we're going to watch this administration move to the center. They did anything but move to the center. They entrenched further, and now they're coming after the big banks. I tell you, this is going to be the Waterloo for these guys, and it doesn't break my heart because I'm not pleased with what we see going on. Tony, I know you've got I'm reading your notes for the program. I feel like I'm getting out of soapbox here, so I better be careful. Jump in here, please.
Well, I'd like to weigh in real quick, Tony, that the downside to that Supreme Court ruling is, can you imagine all the commercials we're going to be subjected to?
we should make a rule that they have to pass a Super Bowl commercial test then.
Or maybe just make sure they have to wait until 2 weeks before or something. Jeez, we're going to see those things for months and months.
Oh, we are. This is going to be good for the advertisers. Yeah, Tony?
Well, you know what's going to be interesting, and I would like your opinion about Joe and Dave, is and we're not seeing a whole lot of talk about this, but before this, Paul Volcker's rules and propositions really did not receive a lot of attention from the administration. And then since that, he really is the architect of what's going on. And within financial circles, it's well known that Tim Geithner, the Treasury Secretary, is not an enthusiastic backer of these proposals. And
that's right.
Like I said, until that Massachusetts election, Paul Volcker was virtually an outcast from the White House. And what's happened is he's increasingly become before that he was an increasingly vocal critic of Barack Obama's proposed banking sector reforms. However, this has elevated Volcker's status. And it also, there's a lot of doubts about the security of Secretary Geithner's position in the Obama administration. What are your thoughts about that? And the reason is one of the things is the financial sector really liked the choice of Geithner to head the Treasury Secretary. And if this is pushing him out or, giving him less power, what do you think the ramifications of that are going to be?
Well, that's a great question. First of all, I think the elite liked Geithner. The New York elite like Geithner, I'm not sure that he was ever received by mainstream financial markets or mainstream America. Volcker is a little more of a known commodity. We he was there before Greenspan, and so we have some idea of where Volcker's his positions are. At least that's my two cents. I'm stumbling around with a couple other thoughts, but Joe, I'll toss it to you for a fast.
Well, I just think, just like with the Bernanke reconfirmation, it eliminated one question in the market, risk or one. So this question about Geithner, kind of wish it just weren't a question, and that we'd know the players, know the playing field, and go forward.
Well, I think it's going to create more uncertainty as far as the policies. We're starting to see some things. There's a shift for sure, and we're watching that begin to take place. And I think one of the things is 45-16. No financial company is too big to fail is something that we're going to have to pay a lot of attention to, especially as we look at where we're selling loans. And Joe, I want you to speak specific to, how this has a dynamic or how this plays into the dynamic as it relates to secondary markets and specifically the correspondent investors that are so prevalent, have been so prevalent in the market as buyers.
Well, it's essential, and those people, the economies of scale associated with servicing are such that, as we all know, there are very few players that are the ultimate owner and servicer of the loans, and then securitize and then obviously pass on the ownership there. Too big to fail would mean that there'd have to be some shrinkage, and as we've talked about in the past, some of the easiest ways to shrink are the assets that are the easiest to sell are the mortgage assets, because there are, just like we talked about, warehouse lending was an easy way to shrink. So, mm-hmm. you know, being too big to fail would I think, dump a supply of assets on the street that maybe could not be absorbed and would be negative for interest rates, as well as eliminate the efficiencies that go along with having the outlets that we have today and the efficiencies of servicing that are concentrated in one area. Ultimately, all that's going to lead to higher rates.
Yeah, it's hard to look at this thing in any other way other than anticipation that we're going to see rates higher. I mean, but the reality is we still have very low rates. I mean, historically speaking, I go back, I remember starting in 1973, and I watched rates climb. I mean, prime rates, FHA programs, I mean, super, they didn't have FICO scores per se back then, but I mean, the folks with the most stellar credit were paying 16, 17, 18% for interest rates. And so, I mean, we're still low. That was a high, historical high. We're still in the historical low. So I think we can digest a increase in the sense that people will accept higher rates, but I'm not sure this economy will accept the higher interest rates.
Well, there's lots of talk about what happens at the end of the MBS purchase program to the housing market because of the influence on rates. What happens to the housing market at the end of the first-time homebuyer tax credit in April? And to weigh on top of that, the additional increases that might come along with uncertainty in the marketplace would just be that much more damaging to the recovery. And, you know, I think that's a good reason why, and I applaud the delay in trying to handle the Fannie Freddie issue right now because that would be terribly destabilizing at a time we don't need it.
Tony, we're going to go to a break here in just a moment. Before we wrap up the talk about the mood and the mood shift in Capitol Hill, do you got anything you want to add to that? I can't wait to get into some of the strategy talk, which we're going to get into this next segment. Tony, anything you want to add to these comments?
No, I think this all relates together, and I know we've spoken about this, but really this is really a communication or a paradigm shift in that there's going to be high expectations that the companies stop operating in silos and that they connect, and I love the term you use, they have to connect the operational, production, and risk management dots that are inherent in mortgage banking, and there's really going to be a need and a call to really elevate the game of mortgage banking. I think that's really a good segue into what we're going to be speaking about next.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into that because, folks, we're going to be really talking about you and your strategy. What are you going to do moving forward? What should your company be doing? We're going to be in that and into that deep in just a minute.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
Whether you need a new warehouse line, are making the transition from broker to banker, are interested in mergers and acquisitions,
or anything in between, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Welcome back. This is Dave Licken with Licken on Lending. So how should you be adjusting your strategy in light of this new political climate we find ourselves, the reality that we may find interest rates going up because the feds are exiting the MBS purchase program, and all the various dynamics that are going on here? What should be your strategy? Well, one of the things that we're seeing, and Tony and I were recently working on we have a mutual client that was found themselves reacting to things going on and the changes that are going on within HUD, and specifically the fact that HUD is really focusing on those that have a high compare ratio. And so we were trying to help a client work through some of those issues, and I think one of the lessons we're walking away from that is you cannot be proactive enough. Do not wait until your compare ratio is up there and you're getting a notification that it's too high. you should be monitoring your compare ratio, and you should be doing something about it in advance, forming a plan. Tony, that was really some great insights you gave that client. Without getting into the specifics of that situation, is there some general walkaway knowledge that we should really be providing our listeners as they consider their operational strategy?
You know, and that represents a perfect example of where this paradigm shift is going, because before, I would say even as recent as a month ago, some of the actions that were taken and the way that it was managed or operationalized within HUD would have been different than what the environment is today. In essence, I know that we've all been on the phone, been with Washington, talking to our contacts, and there is a definite shift in perception on how they're going to administer risk management, because we're all hearing that HUD, you know, their capital fund is low. So they have to recapitalize that. They're looking at their risk management. They've brought in a risk manager. So the pair, and in addition to the items that we were speaking about earlier in the show, so just as you stated, there are certain injection points where you bring in partners or looking for help or somebody to really make a difference on how you're operating your mortgage company. And it's going back into now connecting the dots. You have to connect the dots operationally, risk management, production, sales. So what that means is if you're seeing these issues, you have to really take early action in the process. And in the past, you were able to do this at the end. You get a little slap in the hand and then go forward. That is no longer the environment that we're working in. And you have to fix these issues early in the process. So I think that is where all these items that we're speaking about is going to affect mortgage companies. So I think that's the message that we're trying to really get through to our listeners on this program, because there is that shift. There is a new level of playing expectations that the federal government, good or bad, whether you agree with it, we have to live within that environment now.
Well, you said, look at that. They've got a fund. I mean, it's our fund. It's our taxpayers' money going into these things, and the fact that there have been, you know, the issues that have been created. You know, the depletion of the fund to the extent that it has is significant, so we can't ignore it. Now, Joe, not many people know this, but anyone listens to you and knows you. You're one of the old line mortgage bankers. You've been around forever. You've run very successful mortgage banking companies, and I think you're a good voice of many of the mature, well-run companies out there. But even those guys are finding themselves in a different environment. Am I correct?
Well, they are, Dave, and you know, the mortgage industry has always prided itself on making being entrepreneurial, being efficient in its operations, being able to make decisions, not having a real steep pyramid employment structure, and what it sounds to me like is a lot of that's going to have to change, that we're going to become more bank-like because we're going to become more regulated. And I've been in both environments, and it's a shame, but in the regulated environment, in the back of your mind, every decision you make is going to be, well, what will the regulators think? And the environment that's created by that is less efficient, because you have more people that you want to get their blessings from. As Tony mentioned, you've got a number of different areas, one of which that, you know, has not been integral in mortgage banking operations has been that risk management activity.
But
you know, when you're making and selling loans and you know the rules, I mean, it wasn't up to the mortgage bankers to decide a NEGAM monthly adjustable coffee arm was a bad portfolio product for somebody. But you know, as you include more and more people in the analysis of activities, you will necessarily have to document your decision making process better and include more people in the process.
Yep, absolutely, Joe. And I think the thing, there was a mentality amongst mortgage bankers, new, old, anything, is if I can get someone to buy this loan, then, you know, then I've done my job as a mortgage banker. That's no longer the case. We're looking at skin in the game. We're looking at layered risk. You've got to take in a much more holistic approach to the analysis of what loan should I be doing.
You know, and Joe, you brought up something very important. Risk management is going to be taken much more, it's going to need to be taken much more consideration, because the new person in charge of single-family housing at HUD was a head of risk management at the largest mortgage lender in the country until recently. So, you know, that approach is going to be taken, and it's going to be carry a lot more weight. So it does need to be integrated into the whole operational and production management processes that are going to be taking place. Because, again, risk management and regulatory management are going to be have an elevated level of importance.
Joe, I think one of the things I keep going back to is we're having a shift, a maturing of our industry as a result of what's going on, where no longer is it, well, the bank or the end investor, whether it be Wells Fargo, B of A, pick your favorite big company, correspondent investor, or Fannie and Freddie, it's no longer them making that determination. They're pushing that accountability and that credit analysis down to every originator, especially if we got the skin in the game kind of legislation that's out there and floating around as a possibility. I know many think it's a game over, but I think I believe that will be defeated. At least my hope. Maybe I'm hoping on that, Joe. It's a defeated, but
probably as it relates to Fannie, Freddie, and Ginny type loans.
Yeah, I think it's distinctly possible that will be defeated. But here's the deal: you got to look at the flavor. Which way are the winds blowing? And that's what I want to bring to our listeners, Joe and Tony, is an awareness of. What is that, you know, I grew up in Minnesota and it's an agricultural community, and my dad always said, you know what, you want to know what the weather's doing? Look up at the top of the barn and look at which way the weather vane is blowing. We've had an about face. That thing, and when it starts spinning around and we got different weather patterns coming in, as we certainly do in this industry, you've got to sit and look at the overall themes, the direction of the winds. And the wind is blowing in such a way where accountability is getting pushed down further and further to the originators, all the way down to the loan originator. And you have to start taking on a different mentality, moving from a mentality of, can I get someone to buy this loan, to the point of, can I get this loan in a place where I'm comfortable with the risk? Tony, you guys do a lot of training. Are you seeing a shift in this?
Yes, and we're actually seeing a lot of the large lenders also taking a more concerted effort in training their sales staff, because it's really being pushed down to them, saying quality starts with the loan officer or the loan originator. So that's one of the things that we're really seeing, because we're talking to a lot of the large lenders saying, hey, can you come in and train our staff about the fundamentals of the industry? Because it is surprising. A lot of them, and even people that have been in the business 5-10 years, really do not understand the fundamentals of the industry. And I think that's another shift that's going on. You know, when we started in the business 20-30 years ago, we didn't have AUS systems. We didn't have computer programs to print this out. Literally, I know, David, we've talked about this. We can go into a restaurant and qualify somebody on a napkin. That skill level is not there any longer because of the reliance upon AUS systems and computer systems. While it's been very good for scalability, I think it has brought down the level of expertise. And that expectation at the loan officer level is expected to increase.
Yeah, that is, and I think that's really the shift, Joe, that, you know, I mean, you've seen this. I mean, you remember the old days when you and I got involved in this business, and Tony, I don't know how long you've been at it, but 37 years for me. Joe, I think you're right up there pretty close to it.
1985.
You know, I started in 1973. The reality is we didn't have any of this technology. I created one of the first technology companies out there called Interlink Software. I created that in my garage. The reality is we become too reliant, and then on top of it, we grew as an industry. In any tree or any plant that grows rapidly up doesn't have the strength in the root systems to endure the storms, and that's why we're seeing so many companies go out of business right now, and it's difficult and challenging to see that. Joe, again, you know, we're going to take a quick break, but do you have any comments you want to add to this as we wrap this segment up?
It's as you mentioned earlier, it's got to be something that you are willing to accept and embrace and go with it. It's probably a pendulum swung too far one way, but you're going to have to go that way for a while.
You know, the reality is, and the importance of reading those QC reports, how many times, Joe, have we watched different companies? And, Tony, I know you're on this side of the table, and I'm preaching to the choir here, but we watch so many people say, okay, do I have to do quality control to have this investor approval? Yeah, okay. But they didn't ever treat it anything more as just a necessary requirement. They never used it effectively as a management tool to manage risk internally. And if you find a good QC firm like Wetzel Trott, I think these people are outstanding in helping you build a solid business with these, in light of this new economic environment and this new credit environment we're in. We'll be right back after this word.
In today's climate, quality counts more than ever, and Wetzel Trott can help your company maintain the quality that you require to survive in an ever-changing market. With over 450 customers across the country, Wetzel Trott has specialized in quality control reviews for residential lenders since 1985. Wetzel Trott can assist your organization in maintaining a high standard of quality within your residential mortgage operation. They offer a wide variety of services, including loan quality control, servicing quality control, quality control plans, fraud review services, and even web-based quality control software. Quality is never an accident. It is always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. Choosing Wetzel Trott represents the wise choice of many alternatives. Contact Wetzel Trott today for details at 248-592-2252. Wetzel Trott, the single source solution for your quality control needs. And now, broadcasting live from Austin, Texas, we're back with the Lickin' on Lending Show.
You know what, I hear it, he brings me in, and by the way, thank you so much, Andy Alvey, for doing such a great job of creating these ads and these spots that we have in here, and for producing the program. And when he brings me in, is coming to you from Texas, I keep saying, hi, y'all. I got to jump into that, Joe. One of the things I want to kind of talk a little bit as we look at the new environment, as we were at that break, I was thinking over the new world. The real world is higher rates. And so how should you as an originator be adjusting your style of where do you focus your business? I'll tell you, Joe, correct me if you're wrong, there has never been a more important time to develop a good, solid referral base. If you've been in this business for 2 years, you should not have to really make a single phone call to really generate the referral business if you've been doing your job of marketing to those to that base that you've had. But I see the number of people that are not doing that. It just surprises me. They've got the data, Joe, but they're not using it.
Yeah, it's so important to stay in touch with your customers, so important to stay in touch with the realtors that have sent you business. And, boy, if you get one, make sure you do a great job because, you know, so much of what you see in the coming year is going to be on the purchase side of things. I don't know if we've talked about this in the past, but the MBA production forecast for 2010 calls for more purchase money activity than in 2009 and about 75% less refinance activity than what was in 2009.
Yeah, 2009, a lot of the income that really represented was representative of the refinance activity. The fact that you have a strategy or don't have a strategy for making a shift to the purchase market, and you're saying, well, I don't know how to work with realtors. There's people out there that have got great programs that you can use for that, but I'm telling you, there are people that have some great referral programs that you can use that build, and we'll talk about that in another program. In fact, next week we're going to hope to have an originator on board with us who does a blog, does a great job of communicating to her base of customers. And there's numerous ways to do it with the social networks that exist out there, Tony. And you use these pretty effectively.
Right. You know, you're exactly right. And part of the main component in that is bringing up a study that MBA did is they found that over you get a client, and over the next 25 years, they're going to average 7.2 first mortgages, whether it's a refi or a purchase, over the next 25 years. And the key to that is capturing and keeping in contact with those clients, letting them know that you're there, having them come back. Because a great example is I know all of us talk to a lot of the top originators. I have a good friend that's one of the top originators in the country out of Athens, Georgia, average loan amount of about $150,000. But he's been in the business for 24 years, had his best year ever. And what he said is he really does not call on realtors or referral partners. He has an established network, but a lot of his business comes from past clients. And he did roughly about $50 million, again, last year. And he, in addition to that, he's a branch manager for two different branches. And, again, had one of his best financial years. It was a hard year because of everything that was going on, but one of his best years. But, again, relying and keeping in contact with his customer base, and that's what's taking care of him.
I'll tell you, the key is having the ability to communicate. And with Facebook and LinkedIn and now Twitter, the Twitter phenomenon, I'm using it. If you use LinkedIn, by the way, it links to Twitter, so you can always get, you know, two posts for one hit, you know, one hit, keyboard entry. And so we can probably go more into that. If you're interested in getting in how you can use these social networks effectively, we'd be love to get in on that more down the road. But that is an important part of your strategy. Certainly the realtor should not be discounted out there. They, you know what? There's enough people that have gone out of business. You should not assume that you cannot have a relationship with a realtor. How do you know that realtor's four other loan officers at work have just exited the business? Do not make the assumption.
You should be a collector of orphans.
Exactly, collector of orphans, yeah. There's some realtor orphans out there that are just looking for a good agent. So how do you get in touch with them? We're going to be talking about that in future programs that are coming up. Joe, let's look into a little bit more. I was looking back at some of the Volcker comments that, you know, this, the whole tendency, the tone that Volcker is going to bring on that. And, Tony, I want you to get your thoughts on that. Well, give me some thoughts, Joe.
On the too big to fail?
Yes.
To reiterate, it's going to disrupt the market, and in order to achieve that, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but the legislation would be that it would not be implemented for several years from now and over a period of time. So maybe
that's correct, right, Tony?
The implication of
that's my understanding.
So the implication on the market might not be too significant. From dumping of assets, but you know, it's going to shift business strategies from those top companies that do make our market pretty efficient right now.
You know what's interesting, Joe, is Volcker does have a history of doing that when he was the Fed chairman, where he did disrupt the majorly when he increased the rates and everything. You know, what was it, 19-20%, right in that range? So he has a history of disrupting the market to try to improve the market. So kind of the same pattern. Wow. What is your thoughts on that?
Scary if that happens.
Yeah,
I'll tell you
that.
I mean, I hope he doesn't go back. I hope he learned something back in his old days when he was in there with Carter, because you know what? I was originating loans at those higher rates, but it was only those that were moving and had to move that were doing anything. Refinance business virtually dried up in its entirety unless there was some unique circumstance. Joe?
I had a 16% mortgage, Dave, a VA loan that cost 16%. Fortunately, the property values were appreciating pretty rapidly, and it proved to be a good purchase at the time. But we're not going to see that kind of property appreciation to support high rates, which would, you know, I've read recently where people are talking about the demographics and the effect of the recent downturn in the housing market on demographics will create a longer renter environment where people are willing to rent for longer periods of time, and et cetera. And if we don't maintain some control over the consequences of the issues that create rising rates, we're going to create a whole bunch of long-term renters.
Yeah, and I think that is one of the consequences of a higher rate scenario. A lot of people are saying, you know what, I'll just go to the sidelines. But and there would be pressure to go get in the game, pay those higher rates if we were in an inflationary environment, at least a property from a real estate standpoint. I don't see that happening, Joe, because of the shadow inventory that's out there, the resets that are yet going to hit. We have one more round of resets hitting, I believe it's in the second quarter, Joe, am I correct?
The preemption
arm. They have one more round of resets. And Tony, do you have insights on that?
Well, you know, you're bringing up a good point. There is a second round, but I would be interested in your comments about what this injection of money that's recently been put into the economy, how that's going to affect inflation. Because I think you have that offsetting the other one, so it's going to be really interesting. I'd be very interested in your insights.
Well,
and we're spending what $1.5 trillion more than we're going to bring in. So
right.
You know, that kind of supply of debt's also going to put pressure on rates.
Yeah, I think there's just hard to cut it any other way other than we just got to look get ready for plan your strategies around a higher rate environment and a non-inflationary environment from real estate property values. There was an interesting report on last night when I was watching one of the news channels. I think I was watching Fox at the time, and there was a report on about how people are snatching up properties in Arizona and Nevada and just getting some amazing deals, but they're having to pay all cash, and there's not a lot of those people sitting out there. Most people are cash poor and in a place where they don't see them. They were interviewing the people buying these homes for cash, and they go, you know what, we're going to rent these things. We're getting it at such a good price, we'll be able to get a nice cash flow on these things, on these properties, but we don't really look at this thing turning around and being a home that we're going to increase in value. Certainly there's some exceptions to that. One guy bought a $1.4 million home for, I believe, $400,000 cash and then flipped it for $700,000. So there will be some exceptions to that. But by and large, I think we've got a lot of inventory, higher rates, and a low inflation environment. But I keep coming back to this, folks. Number one, does our economy require or is it dependent on a healthy housing industry? Without question, yes. And is there more of a need for real estate financial professionals than ever before? Absolutely. So the bottom line of it is, if you can survive this climate, and you can, you will probably do more and make more money in the next few years. It's not going to be fun in certain aspects dealing with all this. But Joe and Tony, I just want to say thank you so much. Tony, great job today on the program. Alice will be proud of you. We want to have you back. You just got more information than we could possibly get through years. I read over your notes. And Joe, it's so good to have you, as always, on the program. You're just your knowledge and insights and your even temperament is even it's a great balance for the high energy, got to get it all talked out, guys like Tony and I. So much. Thank you so much, listeners, for joining in and being a part of Lincoln on Lending. Be back next week for another version of or another session of you and your Lincoln and Lending and you and your business model. What are you going to do? We'll help you through that. Come back and listen next week. Thank you so much. Have a great week.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. On the web at www.mortgagebankingsolutions.com. Today's guests were Joe Farr and Scott Sanderson from MBS Quote Line, delivering live mortgage-backed security prices as trades happen, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U, your ultimate education and information resource. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.